Here we go. It's another edition of the 50-50 podcast presented by Physical Athletics, our proud partners, Physical Athletics. For those of you in the Borderland region here in El Paso, you can find them at 2270 Joe Battle Boulevard. You can also find them on all social media platforms at Physical Athletic. That's F-Y-Z-I-C-A-L Athletic, as well as on their website at physicalathletics.com. My next guest, very excited to have him here. He is, full disclosure, a personal friend of mine, of someone who I befriended going all the way back to my days in San Antonio during graduate school. So he's a great professional. We're lucky to have him here. He is, we're going to be tackling a very specific topic in athletic performance in college soccer. He is the director of athletic performance at Southern Illinois University, Edwardsville. He is Coach Zach Rockford. Coach Rockford, how are you?
Pretty good. Glad to be on.
Great. So thank you again. Thank you for your time. Appreciate you being here. And so kind of before we start really asking any of the questions specifically as it relates to athletic performance, you know, or strength and conditioning, as some people may know it as, Coach, give us a little bit of a breakdown of your background, your experience at the collegiate level, and also specifically with soccer athletes.
Yeah, so growing up in Central Illinois, played collegiate football actually, and then really dove into strength and conditioning as it pertains to, you know, the higher level of like athletic performance and kind of going down that route. More so at the tail end of college. It was actually 2014 is when I got into it. We were talking about it today. It's been about, you know, 6-7 years now been in the game. So it's exciting to look back on that. You know, I was fortunate enough to, be at multiple different locations down in Fort Worth at TCU. I was also at UIW where we met. UTSA, also in San Antonio. And then I actually worked at U of A for a 6-month stint after I spent my time in San Antonio, and I came back home to SIUE where I've been since the spring winter of 2017.
Great. And by U of A, you're talking about the University of Arizona, correct, Coach?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. So obviously, you know, and we'll hit on this more later, but obviously where your life clearly changed was at, UIW, University of the Incarnate Word in San Antonio, because that's clearly where you met me, right? But we'll talk about that later. No, I'm just kidding. Coach, that's a great quick layout of your background. If you can, talk a little bit about your specific experience during those stops, all right? Because you're talking about, you know, you of University of Arizona, TCU, UTSA, you were a GA also at UIW. Talk about all those great stops. Talk about a little bit of your experience specifically with soccer athletes.
Yeah, so soccer for me, you know, dates back to college. Honestly, my roommate in college was a soccer player, played left back. So we used to watch Premier League every Saturday morning. And that's where I think I started really to dive into it, you know, and how good the athletes are. So when I got the opportunity to work with women's soccer at TCU for my small stint, I was pretty excited, you know, really gifted individuals. At UIW, when I first got there, I assisted with women's soccer pretty regularly. And then my second year around, head coach for the men's soccer, wanted to, you know, look into doing some strength and conditioning. So I took over men's soccer for the second half of my graduate assistantship. And you start to really dive into, you know, what allows us to make these athletes better. You know, they have high aerobic engines, you know, but they might be lacking on the speed power side or the strength side. Well, those are, you know, pretty easy buckets for us to fill. So I had my stint there. UTSA, I actually worked with women's soccer pretty regularly. Those girls lifted 4 days a week as a group. So we were able to work with them in the afternoons, which was awesome to see, you know, how the different training was at each different facility. And then when I was at University of Arizona, we worked with women's soccer postseason. So it was really good to see, you know, like how, you know, you tackle the off season, the preseason, the in season, and then, you know, that postseason period of time, you know, if you don't make the NCAA tournament, you know, what are the girls doing or the guys doing, you know, to get ready for the next season? You know, how can we prepare their bodies for the upcoming offseason? And then currently in my role at SIUE, I assist with both men's and women's soccer when need be. I was very hands-on when I first started here, just because numbers on staff, but also the guys train a decent amount. And the girls train a decent amount. Obviously, with COVID right now, you know, limited exposure in the weight room and things like that, we try to do as many outdoor sessions as possible. And we just worry about lifting weights in the weight room at the time. So we can kind of gear those sessions up specifically for what we're trying to get out of it.
Right. And obviously, you're a professional, you're a strength, you know, you're a strength coach, you're a performance coach. But when you maybe you go all the way back when you first started working with specifically with soccer athletes, was there anything that kind of surprised you, something you maybe you didn't expect as you started working with soccer student athletes?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the biggest thing for me was how easy it is for us to impact them positively. I'll use an example. I had three of the men's soccer team at UIW train with me over the summer. And we just did a basic, you know, linear progression, you know, make sure the patterns that they're utilizing are sound, you know, their quality movements. And we just try to add a little bit more load to the bar every week. You know, we weren't maxing out. We were more so just laying the foundation for more gains to come later on. It was about 4 to 6 weeks in. And they come up to me and they're like, I took a minute off one of our like runs today. I was like, that's a decent amount of time. It was a 5K. So like some people might like, that's not that much, but like, if you think about it, like per stride, if you're able to increase the distance per stride, you're going to increase that distance over time. And so like the longer the distance, obviously the more ground you cover, which would decrease the amount of time it'd take you to run it. But also the guys are like, my legs aren't tired. It's like my lungs now. You know, so like we were seeing this impact both from the standpoint of the outputs, but also their ability to recover and just push their pace. And then the cool thing is, you know, when guys are going up to tackle or they're holding guys off or girls off, they're like, I can maintain the ball better. You know, I can be physically dominant in where I'm at. And that's one of the coolest things to see, you know, the confidence that they gain from that as well. So, yeah, I think for us, it really just stood out that, you know, how easy it is to make that positive impact and not trying to, you know, do a lot at once, just very basic general patterns. Let's add a little bit load on the bar, almost like an introductory phase. Right. And they see those gains, you know, 6 weeks in, all the research shows that you get a lot of neurological adaptations, but about 6 weeks is when we start to actually lay down like more lean tissue, you know, greater cross-sectional areas with a barbell implementation.
Gotcha. Great info. Great stuff. So we talk about, you know, you have your most of your college soccer players, right? Male or female, when they're playing high school, obviously the majority of them are going to be playing club, if not all, but the majority will. But also when they're playing high school, the majority of them, because they're college athletes, they were usually 9 times out of 10, they were playing varsity as a freshman or or by the time they were a sophomore in high school. So they had that age gap that they had to make up, right? They're a 14 or 15 year old playing with potentially 17 or 18 year olds on the field. When they get to college, it's that all over again, but at a far superior level, right? So for our student athletes, our high school student athletes that are listening right now, and you talked about it a little bit with the preseason, in season, off season, and recovery phases, but what should a high school student athlete right now, what should they expect when they get to college in terms of their strength and conditioning, their athletic performance, coach in their program? So especially at the D1 level, but at all levels.
Yeah. And the unfortunate side is not every kid coming out of high school has the ability or, you know, had a strength conditioning coach. And if you did, you know, you might have been on a program that is somewhat advanced, but when they come into college, you know, that's the first time the strength coach has seen them. So they might put them on a basic program. So, you know, for some of the kids, you might have to take like slow it down a little bit. We're going to slow cook this a little bit because we have 4 years. We want to make sure you progress every year, right? And for the kids that aren't expecting it, the weight room is going to challenge you, but it's also going to be the one place that you can reap a lot of benefit. Why? Because it's the one thing you haven't been doing. You know, when you get to this next level, there's the technical side of the game, you know, how well you are on the ball, how well, you know, you are with it from a skill standpoint. There's the tactical side of the game. How well do you understand your position? And then there's the physical side of the game, which is how fast are you? How strong are you? How conditioned are you? And then there's two other components, which would be like nutrition recovery, which can tap into the physical side, and then the psychology of it.
Right.
Which I know we'll talk a little bit on a little here later, but yeah. So from the standpoint is, you know, the goal for a lot of these incoming freshmen is going to be to, you know, get them up to speed with, you know, how your team is going to train, you know, in the preseason time, it's to prepare you for what the season is to come, you know? So the style of offense can a lot of times dictate that, you know, if you're a high powered offense and you push the pace, or if you're a high powered defense where you put a lot of pressure, you're going to be doing a lot of running, a lot of covering the ground. So your strength and conditioning coach, hoping that they've been talking to the sport coach, knows that style of play can hopefully prepare you to limit those soft tissue injuries, you know, when you get into the first couple of days of practice. A lot of kids will report early in July. So we'll have like almost like a pre-preseason where the kids will focus on strength and conditioning, you know, 3 to 4 times, maybe 5 times a week. And then they'll do like technical captain's practice, you know, where they might play short-sided games, or, you know, they might, you know, do whatever. But yeah, I think the biggest thing the athletes can look forward to is that it'll be a good challenge for them, and that they need to do their summer packet leading into that time, right? You can't possibly get in shape in 2 weeks for something that we've been planning and you've been doing for 2 months, right? And the body does take time to adapt. And so we got to make sure we do the right things in order to be available to play at a high level when the season starts.
Yeah. And you, that's a perfect segue into my next question, because I was going to talk about how the majority, there's a big chunk of your high school student athletes that are, as they enter as freshmen, it's the first time they're stepping in a weight room, or it's the first time they're going to be stepping into a weight room consistently. And now they have a totally separate coach, right? A specific performance coach that's dedicated to them. So what are some of the things that they should be doing now? You mentioned particularly for, let's just say, current seniors, right? Before they get there, majority of them will get packets. If not all will get packets, or they should get packets, from their coaches, right? For their programs that they're going to. But talk a little bit about the packets, but also in addition to the packets, what are some of the things that they should be doing? As here we are, we're just weeks away from entering, you know, that summer transition period. What should they be doing now?
Yeah, I think at a minimum, you're looking at least 2 days of strength training. And then you're looking at 2 to 3 days of conditioning. Now, if you're going 2 days of lifting, 2 days of conditioning, you're probably doing more of it like what we call a speed power day, where you're looking at high quality, you know, speed outputs, high quality power outputs. So things along that line would be like 10 yard, 20 yard, 30 yard accelerations. Or, you know, a flying 30s, you know, curved linear sprints, you know, just different little things that you can do. On the speed power side, you know, it might be jumps, kettlebell swings, med ball throws. If you do that setup, you're most likely just going to focus on, you know, 4 to 5 bigger patterns in the weight room, you know, some type of upper body push, say a push-up or a bench press. Some type of vertical push, which would be like a single arm dumbbell press, or, you know, or a landmine press. I doubt anyone would be like push pressing or barbell pressing at that point in time. It's kind of more of an advanced thing. Right. There's going to be a squat or a deadlift variation. You know, it could be a goblet squat. You know, you're just a basic, like basic program at this point. We just got to give you the basics. And then, we also like to focus on the distal hamstrings, so like hamstring curls, leg curls, things like that, you know, from an injury prevention side, the adductors, so like Copenhagen holds, things like that. And then, you know, you're a little bit, you know, like everyone likes to do a little bit of bicep, tricep, shoulders, And then any of the core series as well. Oh, right. And then, a pulling pattern. I like to utilize, you know, chin-ups, especially for my females. You know, it's such a positive thing that we can get, you know, moving forward. And even your young athletes, you know, it's really nice and awesome to see them to be able to move their body weight efficiently. But also it's something you can test every day. You know, you don't need weight. Like, get up there. Can you do one chin-up? You know, like that's pretty awesome to be able to see them do that. And it's easy to progress or see progress, I should say. So once you have your two strength days, you would look at your conditioning days. We like to break ours into two different styles. One is more of an extensive day where it's more tempo based. You know, your intensity is relatively low because you're going to look at more work over rest. So, for instance, you know, you might be doing full fields or two fields or one and a half fields. And then your rest would be anywhere between, you know, 60 to 90 seconds. And you would accumulate a certain amount of volume. Ideally, we want to increase volume to get to the point of what the offense will hit or the defense or the team will hit in season. What is the minimum threshold we can put them at? So that way we can limit soft tissue injuries when they come to campus. And then the other day is to prepare them for change of direction. We know there's a decent amount of exhales, decels that occur in soccer. A lot of times it's short-sided games, you'll get that. But if the kids aren't playing and they don't have someone to go play short-sided games with, we have to make sure the tissue's prepared for those, the velocity of coming to the exhales, decels, you know, different angles and things like that. So we'll do that on the other day. And then we'll also pair some of our more high-intensity running or more of your HIIT style running on that day. We might be doing like a repeat sprint ability after you do the change of direction, or you know, more like a HIIT style where it's like 10 on, 20 off. You know, try to cover as much ground as you can in 10 seconds, 20 seconds rest, and then you'll do it for reps. And obviously there's certain reps, sets, and like rest that we give them. On the conditioning days, we'll try to do a decent amount of like core. We'll use a decent amount of like the core series you'll see in like track and field, because most of the time they're going to be running with the track anyway. So they're going to be in a very similar setting, which makes it easy, you know, and who doesn't like to do 10 sets of 10 on, or 10 ab exercises for 10 reps each, you know, like you feel like you're getting some work done. And if anything, it allows the athletes to do what we call active recovery, which hopefully continues to build that aerobic engine to do more work later on.
Right. You know, and you mentioned the change of direction, so vital, you know, because obviously the training has to be realistic to the sport, right? And a gigantic percentage of the game is spent in, you know, in transition, right? In that moment where you go from, you know, having the ball to not having the ball, not having the ball back to having the ball. And it's a lot of that. So yeah, that and your high intensity interval training, your hits, as you mentioned, I've picked up on as the, along with the core, they tend to be the vital components of my my performance program with my teams. So and that active recovery as well. You hit on that. So coach, you mentioned, now here's what tends to happen, right? You have a high school senior transitioning to his or her freshman season in college, right? They receive that summer packet and they're like, wow, this is a lot, right? What is a good resource, a good reference? Maybe it's a YouTube link, certain places, because they want to see, hey, where can I see this exercise demoed, right? I think I know, but the name throws me off, or I'm not 100% certain. What are maybe one or two sites or YouTube locations where they can go, where there's a good, maybe a good database of demoed exercises? Because sometimes the packets, you know, the packets can be a little intimidating because it's a lot of, you know, it's a lot of letters, numbers, things that they've never seen before, right? So where can they go for that?
Yeah, so one of the easiest thing, we actually hyperlink. We created a database at SIUE. We're actually going through it and revamping some of it because, you know, we've been there 4 years. We're trying to, you know, create a little bit of a new vibe for the athletes so it's not the same old exercises all the time. But YouTube is really good, you know. Just to plug that name in, a lot of times people call things different names. So it might tag something that's very similar. And a lot of times in the comments or info, you can, they might give you like small little details. But also listening to the actual YouTube, not just watching it, but listening to it. Because a lot of times people will talk you through it or show you like maybe one or two things you might be focused on. And the other thing I think that is important is a well thought out packet and a well developed packet will give you tidbits of information that will allow you to be successful. Right? Like if I'm not worried about load, I'm going to put that in right below the exercise, be like, you're worried about form or you're worried about the pattern. You're not worried about load, you know, and like two or three blocks down the road, you know, as they're getting closer to July, I might be like, hey, I need you to pick something up heavy now. You've already patterned it. Let's pick something heavy up. So yeah, YouTube is pretty good, for that. A lot of times, you'll be able to, get one, at least, hopefully find at least one video to help you on that. It's so gonna be tough though, you know, like the, right. The biggest, like, the common, one is like Bulgarian split squat. We call it rear leg elevated split squat. So it's R L E S S. Some people call it R F E, rear foot elevated SS. Right. So like, so now the kids just call it R-less. So yeah, the R-less. Yep.
Right. Right. Exactly. And that's kind of why I ask it, because so the other thing is, give us an inside look into a common trend. What do these packets, what are they starting? How are they changing? Are they adapt? You know, you mentioned obviously the exercises, but also, are they, you know, cause I'm from the old school from my college coaching days where it was just a one big gigantic PDF file, right? Yeah. There was almost no hyperlink and everything was just like, hey, if you have any questions, YouTube it, right? So there you are literally YouTubing each and every individual exercise. And the reason why that can be time consuming is because just as you said, right, there's like, it becomes a nomenclature thing, right? It's like the same exercise can have 3, 4, 5 different names depending upon where you grew up, where you live. So what are those packets starting to look like now? Are they changing? Are they evolving? I know you mentioned hyperlinks, but give us a visual of what they look like.
Yeah. I mean, ours are pretty detailed. Honestly, one of the feedbacks we get is this is a lot to take in at once. But then once you realize that everything has a place, you're like, you start to appreciate it, right? It's almost, this is very complex. But with the amount of detail we put in there, it's so you have all the answers to the questions you're going to have. And then if you have a question, my number is always at the bottom for them to reach out. So, yeah. So I remember in college, I got recruited to play football and we got our football packet. And like every Friday or Saturday, I was like, hey, what's this exercise for next week? And the coach was like, just YouTube it, man.
Right.
But at the time, like in 2010, like YouTube wasn't that big.
Right.
Like it wasn't like it is now where, you know, you have 13 different people talking about the same exercise and it pops up as soon as you put, you know, rear leg elevated split squat in, you know? Right. So yeah, it is difficult. I think the biggest thing I would encourage people, the athletes to do is reach out to your strength coach. You know, like in the summer, a lot of them have downtime. If you send them an email and you, hey, what are these questions? 10 times or 9 times out of 10, I'm sure they're going to send you, hey, this is what it looks like. Let me know if you have any questions. You know, we're pretty accommodating. You know, I think most of us know our job is to be a servant to the student athletes and to give them the best experience possible. I know our biggest thing is you're going to get the D1 experience here at SIUE, no matter who you are. I'm going to give you, you know, everything I can to make sure you can, you know, realize your potential, hopefully, from your athletic side.
Right. So you mentioned reaching out to your strength coach. So one of the things that I want you to expand on is that, so there almost isn't a single student athlete that realizes this going in as they're transitioning to college. But they quickly realize it probably about 2-3 months in, that they spend more time with their performance coach, their strength coach, than any other coach, any other person on campus, right? So talk a little bit about that relationship with the strength coach between student athlete and between student athlete and strength coach and the time spent. Like, what is that like? What to expect there?
Yeah, so just to give people kind of an insight on what that looks like. So there's 8 hours and there's 20 hours and then there's discretionary periods. So 8 hours are going to be your typical, you know, postseason, your typical early off season, For soccer, I'll give a timeline. 8 hour. Well, so discretionary or like no sports skill with the coach would be essentially like the last week of April for us. So dead week, finals week, and then all the way until, you know, that first weekend of August. About the first weekend of August, the second weekend of August when they'll report, something like that. And that's when we'll start camp. So for us, you know, we spend a lot of time with the athlete in that period of time. You know, as they get into in season, you'll be in 20 hours. Postseason, you'll be in 8 hours. And then, you know, January to the 2 weeks in February, you'll be in 8 hours as well. So you'll get big chunks of time where you just spend with the strength coach. And how we run it is, you know, we're willing to, you know, help out where need be. So the athletes see us often, you know, and they also see us, you know, just when we're coaching other teams and things like that. So the relationship is pretty interesting, right? Like, I'm a pretty relationship-based coach. You know, I'm going to ask you how your day is going. I'm going to ask you, you know, how are you? You know, because it's names, not numbers. You know, if I can't, you know something about you, I'm probably doing this for the wrong reasons, right?
Absolutely.
And for me, it's important that they know that I'm here for them. I don't ask the athletes to do many things outside of what I've done. And the reason why is because I want to know, one, how they feel, but I also want to be that person that they can, you know, talk to, like, hey, that was tough, and here's why. So that way we can better prepare them for next year. You know, be that person that they can be very transparent with. Hopefully they can be like that with their sport coach too. You know, that those are the good teams, right? The teams that the coach listens and everything's pretty transparent. It's an equal, not playing field, so to say, but everyone's opinion is heard. At least now some are more educated than others, but the athlete has a say in a lot of things and we listen, but they're not going to tell you what the truth is unless, you know, you treat them the right way. You know, if they know you're just there to, you know, squat, bench, deadlift and get out of my weight room, like that's not the relationship I want with my athletes. I mean, some people are fine with that, I'm sure, but I want them to be comfortable, you know, coming to the weight room and be like, hey, I'm having a bad day. Can we, you know, talk, or can we, you know, modify the lift a little bit? Cause that's telling me they're buying in the process, you know, they're listening to their body. And I think if we can do a couple things, you know, moving forward, it's setting these kids up for life. And it comes from, you know, some of those trials and tribulations when you're not feeling it today. Hey man, we got to chop wood and carry water. We got to do the basics and continue to grind away. And then, you know, you earn the right to, you know, have a lighter day, so to speak. We do that. You know, not everything that we do is set in stone. We're pretty agile in our approach. But yeah, I mean, coming full circle back to your original question, the relationship is vitally important to me. You know, I like to, you know, have those conversations with the athletes because, you know, in between going from the weight room to practice, like you're going to have 15-minute dead period, you know, and you know me, I'm an extrovert. I'm not going to sit there and not talk to people, you know, like that's just who I am. But also, like, the weight room is a place that we can, you know, you can relax a little bit and, you know, get the work done. And I'm not very militant, so to speak. So it's kind of laid back, but I mean, I'll get into you if we're out of line. So I give the athletes some of that leeway, you know, to kind of drive their own path. I just try to help steer them in the right direction. So yeah, it's a weird dynamic for sure. And I'm sure you've had it, you know, being with Air Force, it's, you try to have that, the professional approach with your upperclassmen. And with the underclassmen, it's like you're not getting away with anything.
Right. It's a balance. It's a balance. And it varies from year to year from the teams and the group of individuals that you have. Right.
And the teams that are your best are the ones with the strongest captains. You know, the captains that do the right thing, you know, like it's a team led thing. And for me, it's important. You know, if you demonstrate to me you can be a professional and you can handle, you know, having a little bit of you know, a little bit of leeway, and I don't have to watch over you all the time, I'm going to give you a little bit of that. You know, I'm not going to constantly hold your hand because that doesn't help me the 23 hours outside of me seeing you, you know?
Right.
And the athletes ultimately carry their own destiny at the end of the day. You know, we see them for 4 hours, 3 hours a day, maybe max between practice and weights. And the athletes can do whatever they want to mess all of that up. So it's important that we know we instill some of those values, and that comes from that relationship, you know, talking to them and getting to understand where they're coming from on things and understand their life's difficult, man. Like these kids come from structured lives too. You have all this free time, and you know, some kids are, you know, on the 18 credits or the 16 credits, and some kids are on the 12 credits, you know, like it's different levels to it. Right. So it's good. It's dynamic and I like it.
Yeah, you hit on that, you know, transformational over transactional. It goes without saying, and nor is it just limited to their specific sport coach, right? It's vital in terms of that relationship between their soccer coach and the performance coach, right? The strength coach, because if those are two extremes, two, you know, styles can vary, obviously, but if they're two contrasting messages, you know, going in opposite directions, and the student athlete is caught in the middle, it could make, that's how your teams start to kind of fall apart, right? And you know, I couldn't agree with you more. You talked about captains, strong captains and leadership. And, you know, it's kind of like the old saying goes of good teams are coach-led, great and special teams are, they're player-led, right? It's player-driven. So absolutely, that's perfectly said. But you also talked about the relationship piece, and you know, when most people, not just student athletes, but parents, everybody, usually when they hear, you know, strength and conditioning or sports, you know, athletic performance, sports performance, they immediately think about the active role, right? The activity, but you know, have they thought about recovery? That's one of the other things that I really push with my student athletes, is educating them on how to take care of their bodies, right? But the two really kind of blind spots that have gotten better, but I guess you can still call them blind spots collectively. When you look at whether it's the youth level, you know, high school, even in college where you have professionals that are doing this, is the nutrition side and the sports psychology, the mindset side. Talk a little bit about those, coach, as to why do they get overlooked so much and why do they matter?
I'll talk briefly on the sports psychology side. We actually have within our high performance team, our sports psychologist, Dr. Lindsay Ross Stewart. She is awesome. You know, she's, I'm biased. I think she's one of the best. I actually will talk to her, sit down. Hey, I got this going on. Like, what do you think? You know, you're the professional, like we all need a coach, right? And a lot of our athletes utilize her, and she'll do, activities within team settings as well. We've done a couple, you know, with, some of our wrestling, you know, more of like a mental thing, you know, as they're tired, can they still make good decisions, things like that. She'll do one-on-ones with teams, She's fantastic. I can't say enough good things about her. But the nutrition side, we work, you know, quite a bit with the student athletes. We'll always do a presentation when athletes first get to campus. Usually with the freshmen, it's more, hey, what are your available options? You know, like, hey, you have the calf. For us, it's called the muck. And then you have your dorm room, and then you have the meals that we provide, for the nutrition center. And then you also have the meals that are provided by coach, whether that's pre or post game or snacks available. And the one thing that, a lot of times gets, forgotten about is just, you need to fuel for activity, right? So, you know, you have to fuel for activity. And what ultimately what gets lost is time. You know, everything is scheduled for these kids besides when do I eat? You know, like, and that ultimately is like, that's like thinking, hey, I got to go from Chicago to LA, and you're used to driving gas, but now you have a Tesla and you don't know where you're supposed to charge your car up at. Well, you're probably never going to get there. Right. So, or it's going to come at a cost, and the human body, it's usually a cost. You can keep going, but it usually comes at a cost. And a lot of times that, you know, it's bad performance, that's injuries, that's things like that. So what we try to do with the athletes is show them the importance of it. And we also try to tier it. Like, what are you focused on right now? You know, we always push quality protein. It's vital for the, you know, replenishing lean tissue and also the recovery side. Carbohydrates going to fuel activity. So if you play a sport that's a little high intensity or longer duration, you're going to need that. And then from a fat standpoint, you know, that's cellular function and bodily function. So we start with the schedule, you know, what are your opportunities to eat? And then what are your options within that? You know, is that, you know, a microwave meals for breakfast, you know, 3 eggs and a little bit of salsa in a microwavable cup, a little bit of salt and pepper, and that's what you get. And, you know, you do like a granola bar or two and you head out, you go to practice or you go to your weights, and then you get breakfast after that. You know, class, lunch, and then you have, say we have practice at 3, you're probably getting, you know, a granola bar of fruit, you know, at that 2:30 slot, just so that you can give 100% of your time at that practice. And then we're going to finish, you know, with dinner on the back end of that. You'll have study tables or homework, and then you'll have like a pre-bed or a bedtime snack. And the bedtime snack's like, you know, 2 sticks of string cheese and a handful of nuts or a piece of fruit. Cottage cheese is an easy one. You know, 25 grams of whey protein or whey and casein mix shake works well as well. So like that's a small example of what we do. Also, we sit down individually with the student athlete and talk through that. What that looks like for them might be different than what it looks like for someone else. So team-wise, we'll talk. And then, hey, if you have questions and you want to further your understanding of nutrition and how it can help you, send me an email. We'll set up a time. And we give them like small homework assignments. Like, tell me what you like. We'll figure out what works for your schedule. And then let's make you, you know, your 5 to 7 day routine and go from there. And then just check in with them. Hey, what'd you have for breakfast? Or what'd you have for, you know, pre-practice snack? And they're like, nothing. I haven't eaten that. Dude, it's 2:30. Come on. Like,
right.
I want you to be 100% for practice, and I want to make sure you're doing what you can, but you have to, you know, hold up your side of the bargain too. So that goes kind of into the, you're trying to lead these kids and get them to understand, you know, what's important for them long-term. And I said it to someone else the other day, I want to be the person for them that I wanted or needed at the time when I was in college.
Absolutely. That's perfectly said. Absolutely. You know, and you talk about, you've been doing this long enough now where you can see usually your incoming freshmen, there's an acclimation period, right? In terms of how they need to fuel, right? How they need to just learn the nutrition process. And then it's time management. It's just like studying, right? As far as when they need to be eating, right? How long have you've gauged this probably at this point? How long, in your opinion, you know, your professional opinion, I guess, how long does it seem to take your average incoming freshman to really fully acclimate to that nutrition cycle that you all want them on?
We actually get some of the freshmen in that are fantastic. Like, they get it. And hats off to their parents or, you know, whatever they went through in high school that, you know, educated them on the importance of it. And then we'll get seniors that are like, hey, I'm taking this fat burner. What are you talking about, man? Like, you're fine, dude. You need to make sure you eat breakfast and we'll handle lunch and we'll go from there. So yeah, I mean,
is that senioritis? Cause they're, you know, on the way out.
Man, I don't know.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, we're getting close to summer. So that might be what it is, but, yeah, you're looking at, you know, a couple times and no pun intended, but you want to give them small, frequent bites. You know, what do you focus on? A lot of time, hydration and, you know, just getting enough calories is enough to start to see better outputs from them because they're fueled, right? Calories in versus calories out is ultimately going to be the determining factor whether or not you have the energy to give effort at practice in the classroom, things like that. If you're not hydrated, we know that when you're like dehydrated from a 2 to 3%, reaction time's down, like all that is down. So if there's 2 things we want to try to push early on is figure out your schedule, make sure we're getting enough calories in to fuel for activity. I call it performance fueling. All right. And then the other thing is going to be make sure we're pushing fluids, especially when a soccer, you know, comes in August. If you've never played on turf, it's hotter. You're looking at 10 to 15 degrees hotter than you are on grass. So like, perspiration and sweating, like it's going to happen so much more than if you weren't. And the other thing I think to think about is from there, if they can demonstrate that they have the ability to do that, let's move on from there. All right. what's the protein or what's the quality of protein, right? If your protein's always like deli meat, let's bring it back a little bit. Or if your protein's always Tyson chicken tenders, can we fix that a little bit? And a lot of times it's, hey, send me pictures of every meal you're eating and then all the liquid you're eating. And I'll have a text string, you know, from the athlete and be like, hey, this is what you had. How'd you feel? This is what you had. How'd you feel? And almost just like a journal, it allows them to take that information, look at it, and then put their feelings and thoughts to it, which ultimately, if you talk about like learning and critical thinking, that is exactly what that is. Now we're in this atmosphere of learning and educating, and hopefully we snowball moving forward. And granted, just like friends work, right? If you say, hey, this guy is really good, he can help you, it's like the snowball effect as well, right? One athlete needs help, they're going to come talk to you. Another athlete needs help, they're going to come talk to you, right? So you do your job with the athletes, and they're going to be your biggest advocates. And that's how you create buy-in. And that's how we can, you know, start to get that culture you were talking on, where the athletes lead themselves and hold each other accountable, and we're just help there to steer them forward. And it's small steps. You know, I still have seniors that can't figure it out. And I also have, you know, sophomores that it's taken me three conversations and they're good.
Yeah.
And it does, you know, having that sit down is vitally important. And I think I've made that error before a couple times, like thinking, oh, they're good, they're fine, and lack of follow-up on my end, you know, but we get to do the presentation once a year, if not twice a year. We usually have an in-season presentation or preseason and then an off-season one, because the focus changes, right? Building versus performing, have some different components to them. And then sometimes the athletic needs of the athlete are need to be taken into consideration as well.
Gotcha. So here we are, we're what, 15 months, approximately 15 months into a pandemic. And we're kind of slowly making our way, you know, light at the end of the tunnel, making our way out, right. Transitioning out, hopefully. How has in that time from the start to now, how has athletic performance department there at SIU Edwardsville, how have you all adapted your training methods during this pandemic?
Yeah, that's a good one.
The Cliff Notes version. You can give us the Cliff Notes version.
Yeah. So, coming in, you know, you don't know, like when we first got back in July, you're like, what are we doing? Everyone was basically doing the same program, you know, basic programming, from a strength side. Every athlete was pretty much doing the same thing on every team. So that way, if someone would have to quarantine, I could coach their team. We had no idea what that was going to look like. From the conditioning side, you know, if you're in preseason, things like that, it was a little bit different. You know, we had basketball, volleyball, and soccer on campus. So the training for them is a little bit different from the conditioning side because the demands are different. Fast forward now, really the biggest thing we're seeing is we got to provide a little more variety or just change up, you know, what or how we're training the kids in terms of some variation, you know, so it's not monotonous all the time. You know, the big feedback that we hear from the athletes right now is they don't get to see their friends train. That's pretty cool. Like to hear, like they want to see, you know, other teams train because they feed off that, you know, that's that culture within your university, you know, that excellence, both academically and athletically. So that was cool to hear, but that's been our biggest thing moving forward is how can we break the monotony of training? You know, like, oh, squat and chin-ups today, fun. You know, and I mean, you've done it. You know, you've competed at a high level. Like, you know how that is. At some point in time, it's not just chop wood, carry water. Like, we have to provide
right.
A slightly different stimulus just to get a little bit of energy out of them.
Right.
And I feel for them. You think I want to be school? You think I want to be coaching squatting chin-ups on Monday every day? No, I don't. But they're sacrificing. We're sacrificing, and that's where you got to be a little adaptable and know, you know, I can get 90% of what I need. We got to give them a little something, you know, to get them back on track and keep them moving forward. And that's gonna be as simple as like finishers. Like we added those into lifts. You know, we might cut a little volume off the lift and then add in like a salt bike or a Versa finisher, a little competition just to keep things engaging. And it's fun to watch them compete, man. I've missed that the most this year, just competing.
Absolutely. So as we start to transition here, we start wrapping up with our first segment here, Coach. This is kind of a loaded question. All right. So maybe just pick one component of it. Whatever comes to you, I think, how will the pandemic, as we come out of it, how will it impact, the future of kind of college athletic performance training and kind of where is just performance training headed?
Being good at the basics pays dividends in the long run. Sexy training does not provide long-term success. And the third piece is a lot of times less is more. I think people get caught in this. If we work harder than the other team, we're going to win. My question always is, are you not working hard as it is?
Right.
So it's like, how can we be more efficient in our 90 minutes to 2 hours? Understand that these kids have a lot of stress, and stress is everything, right? If you're stressed out because of, you know, your home life, it does not matter what I'm doing in the weight room and things like that. We're not going to have what we'd call a positive adaptation. It's just too much stress for the body to handle. It cannot overcome it. So you're hearing a lot of it, you know, being better at the basics, that way we can progress long term. The fancy stuff isn't what it's all geared up to be. And then the other thing is, you know, less is more. You know, we can get a lot out of these kids just by educating on why we're doing this and why it's important, and then to try to influence their 23 hours outside the weight room rather than trying to hammer home, you know, you need to do this 4x12 on incline bench press. Like, it's, and then let the facts speak for themselves, right? Like, ask your student athletes, do a questionnaire. Did you enjoy this semester? Do you feel like you got better? And then ask them, get their feedback, you know, get the coach's feedback. Did you see that this helped the athletes at all? We made small changes. You know, I'm not trying to say revamp your entire approach and everything, but make small tinkers and see if you can do more with less. And then just ask them, like, did you get what you wanted out of this? And then as strength coaches, we always have numbers. So obviously we know whether or not it's working. But there's that, you know, the individual component. You know, and once again, it's names, not numbers. So it's important to get their feedback.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's well said. All right, Coach. Well, hey, this has been great so far. Again, he is Coach Zach Rockford, Director of Athletic Performance at Southern Illinois University, Edwardsville. Coach, I understand you're going to stay with us here for our next segment for Counterattack. All right, just hang tight. All right, and for our listeners, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors. And welcome back to the 50-50 podcast presented by Physical Athletics, our proud partners, Physical Athletics. You can find them on all social media platforms at Physical Athletic. That's F-Y-Z-I-C-A-L Athletic, as well as on their website at physicalathletics.com. All right, so we're back with Coach Zach Rockford, all right, Director of Athletic Performance for Southern Illinois University, Edwardsville. All right, we've got Counterattack, Coach. Hope you're ready. This is where we get to have some fun with you. We get to pick on you a little bit, ask you some random stuff. Are you ready?
Let's do it.
All right, I can feel the enthusiasm in your voice. All right, here we go. First question out of the gate. Any weight room or just in general training session superstitions or rituals? Like, you got to get this in every time, pre or post.
Oh, the pre-workout. I do a pre-workout and creatine before every session. If I take it, I don't feel like training, I just don't train. It'll serve as a midday pick-me-up.
Okay. All right. Emojis, yes or no?
Yes.
Yes? Okay. Most used emoji.
That I receive or send?
No, that you use. Most used emoji that you use.
It's like the sour face. If you know what I'm talking about, like if someone says something like.
Yeah. Okay. Really? That one? More than the one of the LOL variations ones or anything?
No, it's definitely that face because it's sarcastic. It works for a lot of situations. Like if someone's trying to shoot some sarcasm at you, they'll send it back and then they know your answer.
All right, good. Yeah, I'll have to look back, see if you've sent me those. Yeah, now that you mention it.
It's most recent though. So
right. Gotcha. Okay. All right. Last book you read that you completed.
Ooh, 11 Rings by Phil Jackson.
Gotcha. Okay. You currently reading anything right now?
Ask Powerful Questions by Will. I don't know his last name. It's very solid.
Okay. What's that one about? That one vaguely sounds familiar.
Ask Powerful Questions. It's basically within conversation and dialogue, how can we get the most out of, you know, if we have a 15-minute meeting or a segment, how can we ask the right questions and then how do we get to that point? Because a lot of times, we don't get enough out of the conversation. It ends up just being banter for 15 minutes and then we move on with our day.
Right. Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. I'll have to touch base with you on that one because that one kind of sounds familiar, but get the author name on that one. Okay. So soccer question here for you now. I'm going to put you on the spot. All right. So one of these three is not a American soccer player. All right. Sergiño Dest, Giovanni Reyna, Lewis Hamilton.
Lewis Hamilton.
Final answer?
Yeah, it's a guess.
Yeah. No, that's right. Lewis Hamilton's actually, I think he's German, if I'm not mistaken. He's a Formula One race car driver. He's like, I think the king of the hill right now.
No way.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. All right. Next question. Your favorite and least favorite soccer team?
Bayern Munich would probably be my favorite. Just long term, I couldn't tell you who's on the team anymore. And then least favorite would be.
People always struggle with the least favorite, or they don't want to say for some reason.
I'll just go Tottenham.
Tottenham, really? Okay. All right. Okay.
I want to upset some people with that one, so it's okay.
All right. So you are the president. You're voted the president or the king of the sports performance industry, right? The athletic performance field, the entire industry. What's one thing you'd change tomorrow?
Everyone's ego.
Because
if we all could limit our ego, I think we can find better solutions to the problems we have.
Yeah. I'd kind of like to end the podcast right there, man, on that answer. That's great right there. I love that one. All right. Strangest thing in your refrigerator right now.
I think I have like capers in there and I'm not a fan. They just, someone brought them over or something. They've probably been in there for 2 years.
Been there. Yeah. Been there pre-pandemic.
I'm not going to eat them. And I don't even know how I could throw those away without ruining the smell in the house.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's true. All right. Bucket list destination. A place you haven't been to that you want to go one day, you know, that's on the bucket list.
New Zealand or Banff in Canada.
Gotcha. Yeah, New Zealand for me, man. New Zealand, yeah. Love to go there.
Let's plan the trip after this podcast.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I'll book us some flights right now. All right. So obviously you've had a lot of downtime, right? So because of the pandemic. So over the course of this last year, what's been the favorite? You've binge watched, I imagine, a good bit, right? What's been the favorite Netflix series or show or other show that you've liked the most that you've been able to watch during the pandemic?
Show for me is probably Peaky Blinders on Netflix.
Oh, nice.
And documentary for me is going to be The Last Dance.
Gotcha. Yeah, Last Dance was phenomenal.
I'm actually watching for the third time again right now.
Yeah. I actually kind of loosely related to The Last Dance, tweeted something on that yesterday. So if you get a chance, check out my Twitter feed. Okay. You'll immediately know what I'm talking about. Yeah. Peaky Blinders, that's interesting. That's the second. That's like back-to-back Peaky Blinders references.
Phenomenal.
So yeah, Coach Boswell that we had on our last episode, she mentioned that as well. I haven't seen it yet. So
yeah, you have to check it out. You have to see subtitles though too. I'm not.
How many seasons in? How many seasons is it? Three, four seasons?
I want to say it's four. There might be five.
Okay.
We finished it like at the start of the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there it was, I think Ozark was the next one that we finished. But we had already been into that one as well. So gotcha. The Peaky Blinders, like, it was one of those ones that we'll probably start it again. It's like Game of Thrones, or it's engaging. You know, there's a lot of decent stuff that happens. Hopefully it doesn't end the same way as Game of Thrones.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So here's a different one for you, that you can share. Funniest moment while training an athlete.
So we have a heavyweight wrestler, right? And I won't name him. If he listens to this, he'll know who it is. But he gets up to me one day and he goes, "Coach." He lifts his shirt up and he puts his fingers around his belly button. He goes, "Donut or bagel?" And I look at him, I'm like, he's 270 pounds. I mean, I was like, "You feeling skinny? You feeling big today?" He goes, "I'm feeling skinny." I said, "It's a bagel."
Oh, that's awesome. That's a good one. I like that one. It's awesome. All right. So final question here, Coach. And I asked this one to everybody. Okay. So we're in the clear post-pandemic and, you know, parents, families over, you know, you have relatives coming in from out of town. All right. Sunday dinner. All right. You're the chef. What are you cooking?
Brisket on the Traeger. We're going to do 15 hours. Finish it at 2:03. Take it off. Let it sit.
Little Traeger shameless plug. All right.
We're going to do a smoked queso with chips, like we talked about. We're going to put some sausage or venison in there for some dipping. We're probably going to have some type of side salad, you know, for those that, you know, want to stay a little healthy. It's going to be fruit. We're probably going to do like some pineapple, some watermelon. And then there's probably going to be some pasta salad as well.
Nice.
And then the last piece is going to be some type of like dinner roll or croissants or something, man, because they're just so good. I like my brisket without bread. So we're probably just going to slice that thing and we might not even have any barbecue sauce. It's going to be so good.
So that you didn't have enough Texas influence with you as far as the brisket with the bread, I guess, right?
Hey, it's on the side, man. It's on the side.
All right. That's great. That's great. So no table nachos like I showed you, right? For that smoked queso, like I showed you.
I'm not confident in my ability yet. I don't want to put something out there that I'm not confident on.
Right. I got it's, you.
If I tell people, hey, we're having a cookout at my house and I put something out there bad, that's on my name. So that would not be good. That would not be good.
All right. This has been great. So again, he is Coach Zach Rockford, Director of Athletic Performance at Southern Illinois University, Edwardsville. Coach, this has been tremendous. I appreciate your time. I know we've talked about this for a while now, and we kind of wanted to get, you know, with the Texas High School State Playoffs, we wanted to wrap that up. And then we kind of really wanted to hit on some good things that are vital for student athletes that are not in the college game yet, but also for the, you know, for parents and also for coaches. You know, you got college coaches or high school coaches listening all across the state of Texas here. Before we wrap it up, Coach, any final words, anything you wanted to share with everybody?
Just very appreciative of you having me on. You know, like I said, you've been talking about this. We're longtime friends, and just to be able to be on here is awesome. I really appreciate it. It's an honor. And the other thing is, I'm an open book. My staff's an open book. So if anyone's interested on, you know, certain things or needs help, you know, moving forward, you know, navigating anything, by all means, reach out. We can talk shop, other college coaches, high school coaches, you know, just try to create a community of understanding and of growth in terms of both for the individual and then ourselves as well. So
great. Great. And I know, you know, obviously we'll have video to this podcast, but for our audio listeners, again, you can also find Coach Rockford on Twitter at ZRockford22. Again, that's Z for Zach, ZRockford22. And where else can they get any more additional information, Coach, on SIU, Edwardsville, your athletic performance program? They kind of want to look that up. Where can they go?
Yeah, you can look up SIU Athletic Performance on Twitter as well. It will be under the handle of Mark Jamison. He is our director of high performance. My Instagram, which is Coach Rockford 22, and then our SIUE Athletic Performance Instagram handle, which the staff utilizes, you know, to publish content, whether that's informational or if it's training and things like that of our student athletes.
Great, great stuff. Thank you again. Pleasure to have you here. It's my personal honor, obviously, Coach. You and I go all the way back to that day that we just so happened to sit at the same random table during grad school orientation, and the rest is history. So really love having you here. I appreciate your time. And for our listeners, again, this is some vital stuff. The athletic performance in college soccer, what to expect, where it's headed, what you should be doing now. And it's not limited to just, again, the actual physical training, but the recovery. What are you putting in your body in terms of nutrition? And then, of course, that, you know, the mental aspect, the psychological aspect, because all of these affect, when we talk about the holistic approach, all of these collectively, you know, build the person that leads to building a great program. So, again, for our listeners, we hope you appreciate it. Thank you. And until the next time, keep downloading and keep listening.